Welcome to the Why Isn't It Working? Business and Tech Podcast, talking all things business and tech in the emerging and enterprise space. Here are your hosts, Carl Wood and Michael Hamilton.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast. Today we have Oli Maget. He's co-founder of Platfarm, which is a mobile navigation app for farming. How are you going today, Oli?
Yeah, I'm very well. Thank you for having me on.
Pleasure, pleasure. And as always, Carl is with me today also. How are you today?
Very good. Thanks, Michael. Thank you for asking.
Pleasure. Well, mate, feel free to kick off the first question. Let's get firing.
Wonderful. So, Oli, obviously, we're going to delve and dive deep into the earthworks that is, you know, mobile farming and, I guess, agricultural innovation. But before we get there, I guess what we'd really like to talk about is how your journey came to this particular point. You know, have you always been in the agriculture and tech sector, or is it something that sort of came organically? So tell us a bit about your background and how you got here.
So yeah, a bit of a meandering journey into farming and tech in farming. So I moved to South Australia about 6 years ago and became a grape grower and then just kind of sold up our lives in South London. And that obviously helped me to move into the ag tech side of the world. But previous to being out here, I used to work in the interactive side of television. So I used to work for kind of our equivalent of Channel 7 called ITV. So I used to manage the interactivity with the shows. And actually, I still occasionally have done that here in Australia. So I've worked on a few series of The Voice here. So if you voted on The Voice, I have the role of helping to produce that and make sure it all works correctly. So yeah, interactive TV, and then helped to found a studio that made Facebook games when Facebook games were really, you know, in Farmville and etc. was all kind of a rage. So they were great days making games. And then obviously trying to now bring some of that experience and knowledge into agriculture. But yeah, we just rolled up our sleeves, became growers, wanted to do something a bit more meaningful with our lives, but then got really frustrated, and then Platfarm sort of kind of came out from there.
Awesome. So tell us a bit more about Platfarm, because I mean, this is quite exciting technology, and you know, it's great to see innovation within Australia in this area, specifically considering our agricultural presence. So what exactly does Platfarm do, and you know, how does it work?
So Platfarm basically got born out of my frustrations when I first became a grower, that in agriculture now in Australia, it's very data rich. So we as growers, we're about a month away from harvest when we record this. I'm getting imagery showing the health of my crops, our vines, basically twice a month at the moment. So I can see the variability of our blocks, and I should be carrying out work to help even up our blocks and really basically work smartly. So we have lots and lots of really insightful spatial data, but because in grape growing, we have small, simple tractors. So we don't have those tractors that you might have seen in broadacre farming, which are packed full of screens and steer themselves and have variable rate control within them. You get down into horticulture and viticulture, they're small, simple tractors. So you have, because there's no tech in them, there is no easy path for you to turn all this data you can get into actual practical action. Like, so if I want, you know, bringing a contractor in and I want them to, let's say in 2 months' time, spread compost at a couple of different rates across a couple of our blocks, before Platfarm, you end up having to physically tie tape up. You kind of print your map off. You've physically tied tape all around the vineyard trying to kind of communicate with your team. So it ends up being an incredibly lo-fi end of the data chain to what is incredibly powerful data at the head end of it. And actually most farmers can't be bothered with that. So we just do the same work to all of our land, irrespective of its variability and what it needs. So so we just kind of got started, built Platfarm with a friend to actually solve our own problem. And then it's grown organically out from there. But it acts, sorry, just to answer your question, what it actually does, you basically think of it like a, you know, you'd have like Google Apps helping to direct you when you're driving your car around North Sydney, telling you to go left, right, straight ahead. Basically, we do something similar where we just communicate to the grower visually and verbally when to start work, stop work or change rate, and it's helping also just to track the work that they do. So one of the things that we, it's really important in grape growing, there's certain tasks where we mustn't miss any part of the vineyard. We often do a lot of our work in the middle of the night, and it is really easy to miss patches, and that's where we start to, you know, then you start to see problems with disease setting in when you haven't properly covered your vineyards, if you're you know, spraying for certain pests and diseases. So yeah, but it's all about just basically use your everyday mobile phone as the core device to help us start working smarter.
So do you actually have like an integrated solution of data? So you bring in data from all different areas, or is it, or is the imagery the core part of the actual platform?
It's all at this stage, it's all driven by imagery, but it is really important for us. Again, probably, I'm sure like you've covered, you know, in lots of other tech sectors that you've covered, you'll see lots of places where there's basically silos of data, and half of the challenge is just to kind of wrangle that data out and make it, you know, refine it so it's at all useful. They're exactly the same in grape growing, where we just pull in imagery. Normally it's from satellites now. So that's kind of what's suddenly really making a step change. Satellites are able to create imagery at a high enough resolution that we're able to basically see every vine. And that's only happened in the last couple of years. So we take that imagery, and then we allow you to draw as a grower, draw on top of it where you need work carrying out, and then share that with somebody else in your team or your phone, and then it just talks to you as you're driving up and down the rows.
But awesome.
But it's all about keeping it simple. We're trying to kind of work and solve problems that, you know, us everyday growers are really struggling with right now, rather than trying to kind of do things like solve problems which maybe we don't yet know we have, although we do have them, you know, they're not front and top of mind.
So obviously it makes you more efficient with your farming practices, obviously, with what you're doing on the day-to-days. But what about the business outcome for the grapes, you know, making money from that way? Does it have a profit impact or cost reduction impact? Yeah.
Again, grape growers, basically like the commercial model of being a grape grower, slightly depends on what region you grow in. So in McLaren, so we grow in a McLaren Vale, just south of Adelaide. We grow for Treasury. So we're graded in our wine. So we are graded A and B grade. It makes an enormous difference. Like we only farm 6.5 hectares of grapes. So we do about 40 tons a year. But basically the difference between me getting A and B grade is about 20 grand. And that's pretty much all profit. So suddenly it kind of goes from you having an okay season to actually seeing a reasonable return. And that's us just as a small grower. But then for other, you know, in other instances, it's, you know, in Sunraysia and the Riverland, it's really driven about tonnage. But again, at the moment we carry out, so we direct work to help you to make your grapes as even as you possibly can. And when you're graded, one of the things that the winemaker is looking for is the evenness of the fruit across the parcel of grapes that are delivered to them. So it helps there. But also, you can just save input costs. So there's lots, grape growing is one of the highest input cost forms of agriculture. So, you know, we can spend easily $10,000 a hectare on inputs, you know, on our cost per hectare of production. So, and there are things like just spreading mulch and compost under vine, where you could easily spend $2,000 or $3,000 a hectare. So there are like nice, easy, quick wins where you can just actually spread that cost over, you know, more blocks, or actually just apply it where it's needed most. And it's all, you know, when you come back to the bigger picture of agriculture around the world, because like most farmers around the world aren't farming with any precision. You know, when you look at like the macro opportunity to make a difference in farming around the world, it's about utilizing imagery from satellites or data from satellites allied with a farmer's mobile phone to help them carry out work where it's needed most. And the World Economic Forum projected that, you know, if about 25% of farmers around the world suddenly started to work smarter, it would save them about $100 billion a year in input costs that they don't need to spend. You'd grow about 300 million tons more food a year. So that's enough to feed about 500 million people. Utilizing space smartly, which is all just, you know, exponentially moving. And then we just have to find a really lo-fi solution to help the world's farmers start to kind of actually make use of that so they don't get totally left behind.
What's funny to say, across my research the last couple of years, in all countries too, you know, regions, I've noticed, and the numbers always come up the same, is that farmers waste about 80% of their compost or their inputs a year, like 80% of it on costs, right? Have you got your costs down, you know, and wastage down drastically from 80% down to what, 40% or something with your platform, or
it's how are you going with that? Yeah, so it's you know, again, God, every farming system's a bit different. There's like, in certain forms of farming, there is an awful lot of wastage, like right at the point of harvest and post harvest. Working smartly will certainly help to change that. I'm just trying to think about, you know, just with cost, like if you just took it with compost, we will actually, have the confidence when you start to kind of work a bit more smartly and you can start to see the impacts of the work that you're doing smartly on the land. So, you know, like we'll do something this winter to, we'll carry out certain activities to a certain parts of our block. And then next year when I see the imagery, I'll actually start to see the impacts of that. And what it does is it is actually helping me to have confidence to invest in our vineyards. It sounds a bit counterintuitive, but some of the things that we actually need to do most as grape growers at the moment is actually apply inputs to our soil, make our soil healthier. So a lot of this is organic inputs to make our soil healthier, to make our vines healthier, to make them kind of withstand the pressures of extremes of temperature we're getting hit with. With just withstanding all the diseases and viruses that grapes can get. So, and that's the big stuff, like, yeah, we need to make vines and soil health. We need to improve the soil health. And sometimes that needs us to actually invest a bit more, but it will mean that we have a viable vineyard in, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, and we're not, you know, having to kind of rip it out and start again, and or maybe even switch to a new crop. So, yeah. Hopefully that answers you.
I mean, it's interesting this because, I mean, wine, for example, is one of the most popular exports, you know, within Australia. And obviously, if you look at the Southeast Asian region, as well as the Americas, you know, Australian wine seen as very much a premium product. And it seems like this sort of technology can also help, you know, almost lower the entry point. Because if we look at the market where we have, you know, the Spanish and the South American wines that kind of dominate that $5 to $10 region, Australian wines always been seen as like kind of a $15 and up. But for a lot of emerging markets, this sort of technology might give, you know, a bit of a lower price to entry as well.
Yeah, it's you know, when you see the great, really good, like sort of theme to pick up on, and it's great. You know, when from the wine industry, it's interesting how different parts of the world see Australia differently. So, you know, like, I don't know if you've ever spent any time as an Aussie in London, but, you know, like Australian wine's really cheap in London. It's just considered like really, really good value. And so like Australia sends in kind of quantity an enormous amount of wine to the UK, but its actual value of exports is not relatively the same compared to, well, you know, China, well, has been the best of both worlds until recently, which has been both really good quantities and also paying premium prices. And it's always a challenge for Australia, like where to, an Australian wine, like where to fit in the ones, you know, the yellowtail side of the world compared to the kind of Penfold side of the world. And we're sort of a bit in both, we've got a foot in both camps, which is interesting. And then you get, you know, you get the French who very much, you know, around the world have their premium position. Yeah. subject often talked about, but tech definitely. When we start looking at things like mobile phones and being able to help to measure and quantify the work that we do as grape growers, one of the things that feels like it'll emerge over the next few years for Australia is for us to be seen as a really sustainable grower. And there is going to be, you know, this next generation of wine consumers. Sustainability is hopefully going to be a really important purchasing factor for them. So if we can be seen as sustainable growers, like and of which, creating data is going to be a big part of that. We need to kind of get those moves right now and get the building blocks right now for all of that.
So what's your approach in regards to PlatFarm? Is it to work with sort of the smaller vineyards to start with and refine the product and then kind of take it, you know, to the larger commercial growers? Because as you said, the machinery in those sectors might be a little different, but obviously they could still benefit from something like this as well.
Yeah. We've really tried to work with some of the big, we've worked with some of the big growers like Accolade Wines and Brown Brothers, like some of the big sort of family enterprises. Taylor's Wines would be another one in Clare. And there's a number of them that are really, really innovative. So we've just looked for, you know, again, in that adoption curve, we've just had to find innovative early adopters to help us to actually develop the product and who are happy to spend time with it when, you know, it still needs refinement. But, and again, we found some really great smaller growers as well. But ultimately, because across the whole of the wine industry, tractors are small and simple and have no tech in them, we ultimately have to work towards a solution, like a technology ecosystem that can provide value for the Treasuries and Pernod Ricards of this world, as well as the kind of growers like me who are small independent growers. And we've actually been doing some work with, we've started to work more with the tractor companies. So again, people like Kubota Tractors, really forward thinking and seeing that, you know, incredibly reliable, they're like the Toyota of tractors, incredibly reliable, cost effective tractors, but again, don't typically have any technology in them, and they really see an opportunity for a mobile phone to help their customers actually make more use of their tractors, and that feels really interesting way of sort of scaling, again over time, scaling this up in across the world's farms. But when you look at the world's tractors, there's like just, I think there's nearly 30 million tractors around the world. About 29 million of them will have like no tech on them. Your perception, I think people's perception of agriculture compared to actually the footprint around the world, it's a lot more basic and lower tech when you look around the world.
And with your business, obviously in Adelaide, you're operating. What do you find with the agriculture industry in Australia when it comes to investment, for example, to grow businesses like yours? Are you relying on investment, or are you just relying on organic growth from your customers, or how are you finding it at the moment?
We've done a combination of bootstrapping things ourselves to get ourselves started. It's just been little bits of support, but we actually have had some really good support from, there's a South Australian kind of startup fund that you can get. It's like a very early commercialization fund that is run by an organization called Fixie for the Australian, South Australian government. They've supported us and actually helped us to get where we are today. We've had little bits of help from Wine Australia as well. We've been a part of an accelerator program called Sproutex, which is run out of Melbourne. And through that, we got some investment from Artesian Ventures. And then we've managed to kind of pull together a convertible loan note from SVG Ventures, who are in California. And yeah, it's been, up to this point, it has been pulling various things together quite nimbly. Up to that, there's sort of this, obviously this interesting tipping point about, you know, can you get to the point of being able to show genuine scalability? Like, we have our vision for the future about how mobile phones are going to get increasingly smarter and more accurate, and imagery is going to get more useful, and it's just, you know, we had that vision like 4 or 5 years ago, and the reality is just catching up with us around now. So yeah, you just got to stay in the game in agriculture. It's a battle of attrition, and you just got to stay in the game and keep working, and timings will eventually, if it's meant to be, come together for you. So, but we've found, we found our way through. Lots of stuff obviously doesn't, you know, for the startups that we've seen going through this world at the same time as we have, a lot of them have not been able to make it. That's obviously very, very normal, but but I think ag tech, especially after 2020, ag tech seen as one of those areas that really is actually quite important. It's quite different from an investment perspective. So it feels like people, you know, as that VC world comes into agriculture, they're going to probably be people who are quite specialized around impact investing or really understand agriculture, or they're going to be family offices. Yeah. You kind of have to know the space, is it doesn't sort of fit. You know, I'm sure you've interviewed lots of SaaS businesses that are just like got these crazy growth numbers when they get it right. It's, you know, and it was the same in Facebook games. When Facebook games were good, like we were, you know, you're growing at like 1 million players a month at one stage, and a lot of that quite virally and organically. Obviously, that's a consumer-orientated business, but very different in agriculture. But agriculture is important. You know, we're doing something that's meaningful.
I mean, it does have a lot of government's, you know, support as well. It's one of the sort of key innovation areas. But I mean, from your experience as well, Ollie, as we know, you know, running a startup's not all peaches and cream, right? It's pretty brutal, and you know, it's a case of whittling down to the ones that survive. But for the ones that have moved forward, is there a common theme that you see? Like, is there something, you know, is a lot of the time what we've found when we interview people on this podcast, a lot of people when they go and create a solution have lived through the problem in the industry for say 5 to 10 years and then gone, okay, and they have that relevant experience. Do you think it's the same for agriculture, rather than someone coming from the outside to jump on opportunity, someone who understands that opportunity a lot more is more likely to succeed?
Yeah, that's great, Carl. There's this little thing that we heard called the farmer to geek ratio. And like, if you are a team of geeks and no farmers, the likelihood of your success up to date has been really, really low. You need all the best things that we've seen have got farmers as well as geeks. I don't know if you've ever had things like there's and there are some standout things coming through in Australia at the moment. There's Swarm Farm. So there's a autonomous tractor company out of Emerald in Queensland, like ahead of pretty much every tractor manufacturer in the world. And the Bate family are, you know, they are broadacre farmers. They've solved their own problems. It's where we've come from. There's a startup just last week raised a round of 30 million called AgriWeb. And they are, again, it's that DNA. A load of their founders they're that perfect combination. They're an Australian startup. They have a couple of the three founders, a couple of them come from agriculture, one of them from a livestock background in South Australia. One of them then went on and had some really amazing kind of investment experience at places like BlackRock, I think. So they really knew the money side. And then you've got a Stanford graduate as the third person, who I think came from a defense tech background. And yeah, when you get that right set of people and they know they've experienced the problem, it's good. But it's hard getting that world of developers and farmers to mesh together. Is tough. They don't often meet those two worlds.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. Look, I know when we first met a couple of years ago, Ollie, that we were discussing the agriculture industry and investment. And my research showed that, yes, a lot of people on the street don't understand agriculture needs a lot of support in this country to move forward. We've got targets of $100 billion by 2030. I think that's the target. I feel it should be higher than that, personally. I think if we need to release superannuation funds into the agriculture industry, it's going to underpin growth for Australia and for the future. But I'm not seeing that happen, and it's quite frustrating. I would like to see some of my superannuation money go to businesses like yours, so you can scale faster and not have to go overseas. But yeah, as you mentioned, that those people who have got the funding, they've had to do that themselves, and they've had to work hard. Even if they did have some access to the right people in Australia who have the money, right? Family offices, of course. They still have to work hard still to get that, don't they?
Yeah, yes. And on that super fund point, yeah, you do see, I think it's like there's various Canadian super funds that I think are pretty much the biggest owners of agricultural assets, you know, of agriculture in Australia. There was a funny, like we got going through this Sproutex Accelerator program in Melbourne, Artesian Ventures, who managed that fund, it's a $10 million fund, I think. And at least part of that was a little test from statewide super, I believe. So it's just like the earliest signs of people testing, unlocking some of that superannuation funding for agriculture. But I would agree, to scale, it's interesting, farming, there's a sort of reality in agriculture that if you look over like a 20, 30 year horizon, there is a lot for us to do to make agriculture in Australia like massively sustainable, adaptable to what's coming up, and to reach that like 100 million minimum. Yeah, tech plays a really important part of that. It must be probably a fifth of the solution is wrapped up in ag tech somewhere. And yeah, we have got to find ways of unlocking significant funding to get there. But it feels like the tide last year feels as difficult as it was as a bit of a turning point for people to realize like we've actually got to sort this now.
And on a future vision, I guess, you know, do you see this being able to be able to easily scale and move from an international perspective as well? So, you know, utilizing existing technology like, you know, GPS and mobile tech and, you know, plugging into those OSs. Yep. Is that something that you are aiming for in the future?
Totally. Yeah. And very much the same. Like we're just looking for where we can build on these kind of macro things that are happening everywhere anyway. So obviously like consumer smart devices are just getting better, smarter, the risk, you know, just actually position's really important for us. So just with GPS positioning, it's like accurate to, you know, let's say 3 to 5 meters when you have a clear line of sight in a vineyard to the sky at the moment. So that's quite a technical challenge to then use something that's accurate to 3 to 5 meters to get you onto the right vine row, which might only be 2 meters wide. And then so that's been some of the technical challenges that we're working to solve is that. But over time, what's coming to us in Australia this year, Australia's rolling out what's called an augmented satellite signal. It's called SBAS. So that's going to help us to be able to locate things in Australia to kind of a meter, to actually much better than that. If you also have Wi-Fi all across Australia, that same kind of SBAS signals going up across Africa, it's already there in America. And eventually, you know, consumer devices with the receiver that you'll get in your next generation of a mobile phone might, you know, should pick up those SBAS signals as well. And then all of a sudden there's just this tipping point where suddenly actually in a farm, you can virtually auto steer a tractor just off your mobile phone. And that will be the reality at some point, you know, in this decade. So it's just
absolutely. And I think you're like, you hit on one challenge there at the moment, which is obviously there may be, you know, farms that have, you know, low reception with current, you know, 4G or 5G bandwidth. And ergo, there needs to be kind of an alternative, you know, future plan for that, because obviously, you know, farmland is often away from metro centres where the majority of, you know, our telco is, specifically in Australia. I think if you're looking at Europe, you're probably not too bad, but that is something obviously that needs to be taken into account, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, we're seeing some, like that's such a, you know, a real problem, and maybe, you know, like farmers who might have used the, you know, satellite NBN, might not have worked for all farmers, but they're quite an industrious lot, and startups are meeting that need, and quite a few people who have been in farming have then gone and stepped out and actually worked on really interesting farm Wi-Fi solutions. There's a startup out of, I think it's Wagga or Albury, called Zetify. So they've partnered with Case New Holland, and that's all about actually putting farm-wide Wi-Fi networks in place. And it's interesting, the use case that got them traction and got them scaling was that farmers, you know, when they're broadacre farmers, they're sitting in their tractor and it's auto-steering itself for, you know, 13 hours a day. Those farmers were quite happy to pay $5,000 to $7,000 to put Wi-Fi coverage across their 5,000 hectares so that they could phone, be on the internet while they're in the tractor. And yeah, and like suddenly they're doing really, really well. But so yeah, there's been loads of invention to kind of put localized coverage in place. And I again, this space, and again, just actually where I'm based in South Australia, there are people like Miriota. So Miriota, there's solutions for narrow band connectivity. So, you know, again, in farming, when you get out into kind of like rangeland agriculture, where you're talking, you know, tens and hundreds of thousands of hectares, and you'll occasionally in that countryside have something that is really useful to be connected. So it might be a water tank, a pump, a gate, a trough, but it's, you know, kilometers away from something else. That's created a really interesting use case for point to point connectivity. So basically, Miriota have done amazingly at putting up a network of satellites that as it whizzes across Australia, it can pick up from individual sensors spread around Australia, like little packets of data. So it is literally this pump is on or off, or this gate is open or closed, or this tank is this full. But as a farmer, that's all you need to know. You know, you just, and if you don't know that, you spend half your life driving around just trying to make sure that everything's still working. Like, we're in the business end of grape growing at the moment, and I've actually spent money on Israeli tech, which helps me to see while I'm sitting here, I can actually see on my phone, like the status of at least how much water is going out onto the vineyard. I never used to be able to see that. So I was always a bit panicky about whether, because things stop and don't work all the time. So suddenly I can see if it's kind of working, and it alerts me if something's out of the range of normal, but I still have to go and spend, you know, I'll go out this weekend and check every single the end of every single vine row to make sure water's coming out and it's dripping at the right level. And that's just in my micro world. And there's all the time I like turned up last week and there was like a flooded row where I'd completely missed for a week that there was a blowout, like a load of our pipe just blew out, just been pumping water everywhere. And so there's definitely tons of use cases in Australia for, yeah, just putting that connectivity in place, even if it's in very, very remote environments. And we're, with the likes of Fleet Space, Miriota, we're leading the world in that area.
How do you find with, obviously, with wastage or water wastage and irrigation in Australia? It's a big topic, right? Obviously, the Murray Downing Basin, the salinity and all those things. And with what the federal government's responsible for maintaining the water quality and sustainability, how are you finding we should innovate in that area moving forward? Like, how does your farm go with irrigation? Are you wasting water? Oh, obviously, you mentioned it before. But are you wasting too much and you feel you are every day? And do you looking for, do you reckon there's room for innovation in that area to make sure you're not using too much
water? Yeah, I would say we've done, do you know of the thing that I've actually spent money on as a grower? I've spent money, I love Platform, but I've spent money on everything to do with water. So we spent money on the physical infrastructure, actually to physically make sure we can get water at the right volume to all points in the vineyard and it drips properly. And then the ability to remotely control turning things on and off and see if it's basically working, and soil moisture probes to make sure that we're seeing the water get to the right depths we need to. And it's actually, I would say in grape growing, things to do with water and water efficiency, because they're so, because it's our biggest risk. It's where people have actually been investing most in to date. And it's also the biggest thing that we can do as growers. So after we've pruned our vines in the winter, that basically is an important reset for the quality that we can get that year. But after that, as long as we don't let disease set in, it's actually how much water we apply is a big part. Obviously, nature plays a part of getting the right type of canopy to get our fruit to the right tonnage and to the right quality. So yeah, it's really important for us to get water right, just from quality and quantity. But yeah, when my brother-in-law farms in a region called Langhorne Creek, which is on the River Murray, and they get allocations, we're very like, it's scary. And down the river, just in South Australia, like you could probably quite easily, dependent on if you didn't have long-term water security and you were on sort of short-term buying of water licenses, you could really easily get priced out by things like almonds, and you just actually don't have any water to put out. It's really scary. Clare is another region, very water potentially insecure. They did a great thing in our region, really forward thinking about 10 years ago. And they, because it's always amazed me in Australia, like, you know, when we lived in London, we would re-drink water coming out of a tap that's gone through 8 Londoners by the time that I had it, which you don't like to think about sometimes. But you know, in South Australia, we're the driest state, I think, here, and most of our water just goes straight out to the Spencer Gulf. None of it's recycled. Never really could understand it here. And our grower group got together and actually got a load. It's now owned by a super fund, actually. And this super fund has put the money in to take wastewater from the suburbs in South Adelaide that are closest to us, pump that in there. They semi-treat it. So it just doesn't have, you know, like the fluoride and chlorine, you know, all the last things that for human consumption, it doesn't have that last few steps, which are quite expensive, applied, but it's perfectly good for agriculture. They now pump it up to holding dams by our region, and we have water security. So, and we have that basically going into the future, we know that we're safe, and we completely lucked out. I didn't have a clue what I was doing when we bought this vineyard. So it was just a, you know, but such a lucky break that we ended up in McLaren Vale with a water recycling scheme. And that's actually where super funds, you know, when you're talking about how super funds can help, I reckon there's some things maybe also that they can help with, about long-term, putting in place the long-term infrastructure that will mean that Australian agriculture is really solid and actually could be probably quite lower risk investments for them to get more and more into ag.
Wouldn't mind getting your opinion on something actually based on that. Obviously, looking at the Dutch model, the Holland, Netherlands model, where they've got 24-hour greenhouses, they export about something like $90 to $100 billion a year of agriculture, and they're the size of Tasmania, right, or smaller. So do you think we're going to go through droughts. It's inevitable. You know, it's the way our country is. Then we're going to basically have no water. But should we technically be investing in more scalable, large, arid greenhouses, perhaps? You know, and unused air, and using air kind of nutrients to pull the water. I don't know. You know, I'm just making this up. Should we do that? Should that be something we'd be investing in? Should that be strategic for Australia?
We get together. You know, like as an ag tech community. It's quite a new community here in Australia, but we do get together and talk a lot, and actually talk with the Department of Agriculture and a few things. And it was literally last week we were having a chat about like the big stuff that could happen to agriculture over the coming decades. And it was interesting. One of them is like, obviously solar is really interesting, and it's like, what could solar do to make a really, really interesting change in agriculture? And I remember the conversation was all about desalination is really, really expensive from a power perspective. But if solar really scales and really becomes cheap, you could actually have solar powered desalination. And that just opens up so many opportunities for that. Yeah, kind of growing, I would say definitely a future where things are grown more in protected environments. I would hate to see this happen to, like, we live in a beautiful region of McLaren Vale, but I can unfortunately foresee a point in time where if people want to grow things like Shiraz, which are not quite so strong when they really struggle when temperatures get over 42, 43, that we might have to start putting shade netting up over all our vines. And just aesthetically, you know, from a tourism perspective, our beautiful green undulating region can end up like getting looking half like Holland, because we actually need it to keep to get the crops through. Hopefully there'll be a way that only has to appear, you know, January, February time. But yeah, I'd agree. And obviously in South Australia, we had a Sundrop Farms, which is well, you know, is a solar powered, is like the world's most advanced eco vineyard that's using seawater to help cool it, solar energy to help heat it in the winter and to run everything. And obviously they're still learning. I don't think they absolutely cracked it first time there, but there is so much land. As I drive up from where I am in McLaren Vale, Sundrop Farms is a place called Port Augusta, about 3 hours north, that we are not short of land. Holland, they do so much with nothing. We have loads of land, loads of solar. So it's a different approach, but we can do something really interesting here. And I was just saying, I went to Holland a couple of years ago. They have an amazing unit like that, that connection between the Wageningen, and I'm going to say my crap Dutch pronunciation, but I think it's called Wageningen University is like their top ag school, and they work with startups really effectively. And then the farming companies as well, when the cost of production, you know, like they grow a lot of flowers in Holland, and Rotterdam is basically the clearing market for flowers into the rest of the EU. So all, you know, it's just you know, millions and millions of flowers going through Rotterdam every day. And the cost of production in Holland got too high and they started to run out of land. And they literally just moved their model and they started exactly the same farms to start with in Kenya. And then I think that they've gone up to Ethiopia as well. They built airports to move the flowers every day back to Rotterdam. And so they almost, because they're land constrained, they almost treat certain other countries as just like the other extensions of their of their farming practices. And you see some really clued up. There's some smart farmers I've met in Australia, and there's a lot of smart farmers who are, you know, they might have a farm in Sunraysia that might be growing kind of raisins, or might be growing like something like avocados at a certain point in the season. But then they go to the absolute extreme in Australia of where they could grow the first avocado, and they're kind of trying to grow the first and the last avocado in the season, which is where all the money is made. So, and they've realized that if you grow when the glut happens, that you get such a lower price. I love all of that. You know, when you meet farmers doing all that clever stuff. Brown Brothers is a grape grower who've just made this move to Tasmania really early on, and they've said like it's going to be really hard for us to, you know, to make our business sustainable for decades. We need to have production in Tassie, because that's going to be where we grow our variety, you know, where we grow certain wines in Victoria at the moment. That's going to have to move across the Bass Straits in 10-20 years. So big stuff going on.
It is, yes, very, very interesting challenges, I think, as you mentioned. So, well, look, we want to thank you very much for your time today on behalf of Michael, myself, Ollie. And look, I think we'll be looking at targeting an agricultural roundtable in tech, which we'll definitely have to get you back on to discuss, because I think there's a lot more we didn't cover. I mean, we did touch on water rights before, but one of the big things that we're now seeing is the agricultural impact on that shared water table, which in turn, you know, affects crop growers and, you know, wineries and vineyards as well, as we know. So I think there's definitely a lot more to cover, and we'll definitely have to have you back on for a follow-up session.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. Thank you, Carl. And thank you, Michael, as well.
My pleasure. Thanks, mate.
Cheers. Thank you. Cheers.